The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
I want to answer the question, but I want to actually give an introduction to myself a little bit because I recognize a lot of Americans don't know who either one of us are. I was raised in a working class family. My mother required food assistance for periods of her life. My grandmother required Social Security help to raise me, and she raised me in part because my own mother struggled with addiction for a big chunk of my early life. I went to college on the GI Bill after I enlisted in the Marine Corps and served in Iraq. And so I stand here asking to be your vice president with extraordinary gratitude for this country, for the American dream that made it possible for me to live my dreams. And most importantly, I know that a lot of you are worried about the chaos in the world and the feeling that the American dream is unattainable. I want to try to convince you tonight over the next 90 minutes that if we get better leadership in the White House, if we get Donald Trump back in the White House, the American dream is going to be attainable once again. Now, to answer this particular question, we have to remember that as much as Governor Waltz just accused Donald Trump of being an agent of chaos, Donald Trump actually delivered stability in the world, and he did it by establishing effective deterrence. People were afraid of stepping out of line. Iran, which launched this attack, has received over $100 billion in unfrozen assets thanks to the Kamala Harris administration. What do they use that money for? They use it to buy weapons that they're now launching against our allies, and God forbid, potentially launching against the United States as well. Donald Trump recognized that for people to fear the United States, you needed peace through strength. They needed to recognize that if they got out of line, the United States global leadership would put stability and peace back in the world.
It's clear, and the world saw it on that debate stage a few weeks ago, a nearly 80-year-old Donald Trump talking about crowd sizes is not what we need in this moment. But it's not just that. It's those that were closest to Donald Trump that understand how dangerous he is when the world is this dangerous. His chief of staff, John Kelly, said that he was the most flawed human being he'd ever met. And both of his secretaries of defense and his national security advisors said he should be nowhere near the White House. Now, the person closest to them, to Donald Trump, said he's unfit for the highest office. That was Senator Vance. What we've seen out of Vice President Harris is we've seen steady leadership. We've seen a calmness that is able to draw on the coalitions to bring them together. Understanding that our allies matter. When our allies see Donald Trump turn towards Vladimir Putin, turn towards North Korea, when we start to see that type of fickleness around holding the coalitions together, we will stay committed.
I want us as a Republican Party to be pro-family in the fullest sense of the word. I want us to support fertility treatments. I want us to make it easier for moms to afford to have babies. I want it to make it easier for young families to afford a home so they can afford a place to raise that family. And I think there's so much that we can do on the public policy front just to give women more options.
When you listen to Vice President Harris talk about this subject and you hear me talk about it, you hear us talking exactly the same. Donald Trump is trying to figure out how to get the political right of this. I agree with a lot of what Senator Vance said about what's happening. His running mate, though, does not. And that's the problem. Talking about and saying, I will create stories to bring attention to this. That vilified a large number of people who were here legally in the community of Springfield. The Republican governor said, it's not true. Don't do it. There's consequences for this. There's consequences. We could come together. Senator Lankford did it. We could come together and solve this if we didn't let Donald Trump continue to make it an issue. And the consequences in Springfield were the governor had to send state law enforcement to escort kindergartners to school.
Now, Governor Waltz brought up the community of Springfield, and he's very worried about the things that I've said in Springfield. Look, in Springfield, Ohio, and in communities all across this country, you've got schools that are overwhelmed. You've got hospitals that are overwhelmed. You have got housing that is totally unaffordable because we brought in millions of illegal immigrants to compete with Americans for scarce homes. The people that I'm most worried about in Springfield, Ohio, are the American citizens who have had their lives destroyed by Kamala Harris's open border. It is a disgrace, Tim. And I actually think, I agree with you. I think you want to solve this problem, but I don't think that Kamala Harris does.
This was a threat to our democracy in a way that we had not seen. And it manifested itself because of Donald Trump's inability to say. He is still saying he didn't lose the election. I would just ask that. Did he lose the 2020 election?
Tim, I'm focused on the future. Did Kamala Harris censor Americans from speaking their mind in the wake of the 2020 COVID situation?
That is a damning non-answer.
It's a damning non-answer for you to not talk about censorship. Obviously, Donald Trump and I think that there were problems in 2020. We've talked about it. I'm happy to talk about it further. But you guys attack us for not believing in democracy. The most sacred right under the United States democracy is the First Amendment. You yourself have said there's no First Amendment right to misinformation. Kamala Harris wants to use the power of government and big tech to silence people from speaking their minds. That is a threat to democracy that will long outlive this present political moment.
A sampling of some of the contributions in that vice presidential debate last night. I'm joined by Larry Donnelly, law lecturer with the University of Galway, columnist with the journal.ie. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So you're tired?
I'm very tired. It was a long night.
Okay, what did you make of it? First of all, the performance of each individual.
Well, the first thing to say is it was a civilized affair, which I suppose is becoming a rare event in American politics. I thought that J.D. Vance did a good job on the night. If I had to say there was a victor in the debate, I think it was J.D. Vance. I think Tim Walz started out quite nervous and a little bit flustered. This isn't his specialty, but I thought he got better as the night went on.
I thought Vance looked very assured, very comfortable in the situation. Whereas Tim Walz looked a bit like a rabbit caught in the headlights a few times, you know, the raised eyebrows and wide-eyed.
Yeah, I think in particular at the beginning of the debate, I think that was true. As I say, I think he grew into it. But there's no question about it. Vance is a very smart, very articulate, very able guy. There was a lot of question marks raised, including by me, about why Trump selected him. I think he showed off his assets last night. I'm still not saying he was a great choice, but I think he showed his merit last night.
Now, let's talk about how each of them handled the various issues. In terms of abortion, how compelling was Walz's case for Kamala Harris's view, and how did Vance handle that?
Look, I think, look, Democrats have an advantage on this issue. I think Walz was dead right to draw attention to some of these really tragic, sad cases where women have found themselves in horrible positions indeed, including dying as a result of not being able to access abortion with crisis pregnancies. On the flip side, you know, again, I thought that Vance was able to articulate what I think Donald Trump has long felt about this issue, that is that it's a matter for states, that this should be play out in the Democratic arena, not in the courts. And I think, look, he's not going to convince everybody with that argument, but I think he put forward a reasonably strong case. And he also did a reasonably good job in highlighting the fact that the Democrats don't seem to identify any abortion that they want to restrict.
Now, the question of foreign affairs, if Iran had not bombed Israel last night, it's doubtful that that would have been much of an issue at all. How did each of them handle the ongoing situation?
Well, I thought that Walz was clearly uncomfortable with the question. You know, again, foreign policy wouldn't be his forte, and what he really lapsed into was the idea that Donald Trump is unstable, that he's not suited to be president, that he lacks the temperament, and in a climate of global upheaval, that we need somebody like Kamala Harris, you know, in the White House. That was what he defaulted to. He didn't really address the substantive question in any meaningful way. I thought, you know, look, Vance, once again, I think, you know, his America First foreign policy ideas, those are very definitely to the fore. That's an animating principle for him. It was noteworthy that he was, you know, saying very strongly that Israel is our ally, that we need to back them up if they would, whatever course of action they pursue. So I did think that was notable.
Now, the question, the vice president, of course, and we remember what Pence had to do on January the 6th, and the question of what would Vance do if his mentor, Donald Trump, is saying, I won, even if Donald Trump lost. Would Vance certify an election that the majority believed was won by the other?
Yeah, it was a classic dodge. I mean, he dodged an awful lot on that topic, including the question that I think is most important to Donald Trump above all, and that's the issue of whether he actually won the 2020 election. Vance's retort was, I'm focused on the future. So again, I think that was probably of the night, that was probably the low point for Vance. I think that's something that if this debate surfaces again, I think the Democrats will point to that instance. And again, that'll underscore their narrative about the threat to democracy that Donald Trump would pose if he's returned to the White House.
Now, we've seen both Waltz and Harris talk about guns in a way maybe that Biden wouldn't talk about guns. And that is, you know, I hunt, I have a gun. Kamala Harris would shoot an intruder in her own home. We've seen all of that. How did the gun debate go down?
Well, I think above all, I think it's a sad commentary on the gun culture that, to an extent, Harris and Walls have to almost prove their bona fides on the gun issue. That is, that we own guns. We're real Americans, too. I think that's kind of sad. And I thought what was even more sad, and perhaps another low point for Vance in the debate, was his solution to this seems to be not to embrace any reasonable restrictions on gun ownership, like background checks or red flag laws or anything like that. His solution is to have ultra-high security in schools. And Vance pointed to the fact that a lot of gun crime in the United States is carried out with illegally obtained guns, and that is true. But if we look at the school shootings, at least the school shootings that have garnered significant publicity, they have been carried out with firearms legally held by the owners. And I should add, not just school shootings, the first assassination attempt on Donald Trump was carried out with a firearm that was legally held.
Now, the question of eating cats and eating dogs and eating geese and whatever in Springfield, Ohio, that surfaced in the debate. Was Vance confronted with his own lies about this?
He very artfully and skillfully moved around the question. I think he put it in a way that Donald Trump, should have put it in terms of capitalizing on the immigration issue. When he talks about the strains that are being that American cities are being put under, whether it's schools, whether it's health systems, et cetera, these are concerns that genuinely resonate with Americans. And I think also when he said, on the other hand, that, you know, we reaffirm this idea that immigration is, you know, a reality, that immigration is what has made America, but we support legal immigration, not illegal immigrants. And I think he was very strong on that one.
And the question then of the Haitians being legal, he then defaulted to a technicality, really.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the moderators were keen to point out that the Haitians were there legally. And, you know, Vance said, look, you know, I didn't think you were going to fact check me, but if you want to do a fact check, here's the reality of how they're here and in the technicality as to why they're legal. How much the viewing public caught of that, because a lot of it was off mic.
And
sure.
Waltz quickly riposted that law was in place since 1990. So Trump would have had a chance to repeal it if he had so desired. And it didn't happen.
Yeah, I thought that was another solid moment for Walls. I think, again, the first few minutes of the debate, he was really, really weak, and he was clearly flustered and, arguably outmatched. I think as the night went on, he grew in confidence, and I think that was a good line, a good riposte, as you put it, to Vance's claims.
But you would maintain to any objective observer that the night belonged to Vance?
Vance won, but I don't think that Walls did badly. And as such, I think Walls can claim that, again, it's not his thing. It's not his forum, that Walls had a reasonably good night. And at the end of the day, I don't think this thing is going to move the needle at all. And the final question then becomes, will Trump debate Harris again? And that's a key question. He is resolute that he will not do so, apparently because he doesn't think he can get a fair moderator. But I think that question is going to continue to come up. And it would not surprise me if he decided that he would debate Harris again, because I think that the Republican side arguably needs a boost. I think Trump was poor in the first outing, no matter what he says. And we'll see how the polls go.
And he would believe himself that he would win. As he said he won the first debate, his ego would suggest to himself, I can win the next one.
Yeah, but I mean, the polls fly directly in the face of that. I mean, about 70% of those polled in the immediate aftermath said that Harris had won. What the objective here would be to restore that sense of restraint that Trump actually demonstrated when he debated against Biden. And indeed, after in the aftermath, when the Democrats were scrambling to get him out of the race, Trump kept shtum, which was very wise. Now, if he can go on a debate and appear in any way statesmanlike, which some would say is beyond his ambit, then I think that would work to his advantage and could be important in the closing days, because this race is going to be on a knife edge.
Do we know yet how many people watched?
I haven't seen the figures yet. What I have seen are the results of polling as to who won. And they're pretty much split down the middle, with also a substantial cadre of people saying they're not sure as to who won. In my view, I think Vance had the better night, but I think that's in some ways mitigated by the fact that the Walz people made it known well in advance. This isn't Tim Walz's thing. J.D. Vance is an Ivy League educated lawyer. This is his special
thing. The issue may be with J.D. Vance that he is a glib liar. He tells lies all the time, and possibly more dangerous than a Trump, who is very obvious.
Well, you know, the reality is we've all known that Donald Trump really doesn't believe a lot of what he's saying. What may make Vance more dangerous in the eyes of some people is that Vance is indeed a true believer. He really believes this stuff, and he was effective last night. And I also think, importantly, he demonstrated, some may quibble with this, but I think he demonstrated a little bit of empathy, particularly when we talked about Tim Walz's son having witnessed a shooting, and even a likability at certain junctures of the debate. So all in all, I think, again, it was a good night for him.
Because the predictions were that Vance would be effective but dislikable. And he kind of combated that successfully.
I thought he did himself good favors on it. I thought also the interplay between the two men was refreshing. It reminded me of the old days of American politics, where people could agree to disagree, and there was a lot of that going on. I also thought at the end, where the two candidates' wives came up, and they had a good banter and a good chat back and forth, then they went over and shook hands with the moderators. That's what we used to see in American politics. I hope those days come back.
All right. On that note, Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with thejournal.ie. Larry, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.